I think it's time now to introduce our plenary speaker for today. I'm very pleased to welcome here at the VU Dr. Veronica Kolla. Veronica and I actually go quite far back. I can't remember exactly how far back. When I was at the University of Birmingham, we were on similar conference circuits. And I knew that she had done her PhD at the University of Wien. But what I didn't know until shortly before I got my professorship here was that she also worked here for 4 years as an assistant in my and Martin's department. So there are some close connections here over the years. Veronica is reader in discourse studies at Lancaster University, and she teaches courses in discourse analysis and corporate communication. She's got a very long, illustrious list of publications, and it would probably take me most of the session to go through them. So let me just mention a few highlights. But Veronica is the author of two books. In 2004, Metaphor and Gender in Business Media Discourse was published by Routledge. And then in 2000, Holbrave, is that right?
Yes.
And then in 2008, Lesbian Discourses, Images of a Community, published by Routledge. Also in 2008, she co-edited the Handbook of Communication in the Public Sphere with Ruth Boda, and that book was published by De Gruyter. She's also the author, co-author of many journal articles and chapters. She guess it's about 60, which is quite impressive. So lots for you to read up on after this talk. Veronica has been involved in a number of projects. Her current one is on the cancer charity Discourse. And before that, she was involved in a project on metaphor in end-of-life care. Another activity that she's engaged in, which is relevant to this particular talk, is that she's a freelancer for language consulting for businesses, and she will tell us more about that in her talk. So without further ado, I'd like to hand the floor over to Veronica.
Okay, thank you very much. Is that on? Yeah? Good. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much for the introduction, and obviously thank you very much for the invitation. It's very exciting to come back to the VU to give a talk. A bit scary, you know, but nevertheless, you know, very nice. So today I'll be talking about language awareness in consulting, communications, and campaigning. And I come to this really with a list of questions, some of which, but not all of them, I may be able to answer. So the first is perhaps the very obvious question, why do language workers need language awareness? I'll talk a bit in a minute about what I mean by the term language workers. I'll then draw on some interviews I've done recently to look at what level of language awareness do language workers have? So people who do work in consulting, communications, and campaigning. And also, how could it be raised? I'll then pause for a bit and raise the question if applied linguists, broadly conceived, should or should not contribute to what is, after all, the commodification of language in these areas. And if so, why or why not? I'll then move on to critical language awareness, asking from a teaching point of view, who wants it, who needs it, and whose wishes there take priority. And then finally, I'll ask, and I think that's a question I will not be able to answer, if we can solve what I have called the conundrum of the critical consultant, and if so, how that might be possible. So that's the questions for today. Almut has said it all, really, or most of it anyway. As she said many years ago now, from 2000 to 2004, I was a teacher of business English. Yeah, business English as a foreign language or a lingua franca, in fact, including here at the VU. Since the same time, I've been doing research, much of it from a critical angle, on corporate communication. So my PhD was Metaphor and Gender in Business Media Discourse. I then spent a couple of years looking at the discourse of corporate branding. It's I've also worked on accounting narratives, etc. And more recently, as Almut has also indicated, I also am interested, or have become interested, in health communication. Since 2008, I have been teaching an undergraduate course in Lancaster on corporate communication, which is catering, or aims to cater, to both undergraduates in English language and various business degrees. And I'll be drawing on this as well when I talk a bit about critical language awareness. And since 2009, I have been freelancing as a language consultant for an agency called Linguistic Landscapes, which incidentally has nothing to do with the research area of the same name. In fact, the agency was there first. But there you go. Okay, so that's something I do as well. And Crispin Thurlow, who I do some research with, has said that therefore I have some sort of embodied meta-expertise. And I like that term, so I stuck it in there. But the fact remains that I'm actually giving this talk from two different positions simultaneously. Both as a linguist who works, or an applied linguist, discourse analyst who works in academia, and as an occasional language consultant who works with private sector, public sector, and third sector clients. Good, so, language workers. So I'm a linguist, but I also would call myself a language worker. What do I mean by that? Now, as I said, I'm doing some research as part of a loose network of researchers, which was started by Crispin Thurlow. Started with a panel at 2015 conference, Sociolinguistics of Globalization, and we've had another meeting since, and there's also forthcoming publication, and hopefully also other ways of disseminating our findings. This is a group of about 12 applied linguists who research people who work with language as central to their work. So not just people who use language as a medium of their work, yeah, like doctors or, you know, sales representatives, etc., but people who actually produce or analyze language, texts, design language in very often professional or public sector contexts. So Thurlow says in the introduction to last year's panel, he says, within the wider world of language-dependent working, we also find wordsmiths, professional language workers for whom words are not an essential, not only an essential resource for securing and managing work, but are the predominant focus and product of their work. Language here is not only something to be bought and sold, but also something to be crafted and designed in highly considered institutionalized ways. So think about people writing press releases. Think about people who work in brand tone of voice. Yeah, these kinds of things. Think about people who write articles for a think tank to campaign or lobby for a particular issue. So this is the kind of language workers that is meant by that term. Darich and others give an example of these jobs and positions that are related to soft skills and communication, especially those which are not normally accessible directly through education. So you don't have one degree scheme that leads you there. And the list they give is communication consultant, speech writer, copywriter, in-house communication trainer, leadership and management coach, organizational applied linguists, and we could continue this list, obviously. So I'm interested for today in what language awareness do these people have who work with language as the product and the object of their work outside academia. So, what is asked of these so-called language workers, and what do they need? What I'm giving you in the following is some examples from my practice, from my consulting practice, of so-called client proposals. So what typically happens is that there's a discussion between a would-be client and an agency. It could be a language consulting agency, a branding agency, document design agency, whatever. And following this initial conversation, the agency will come up with a so-called proposal, which they give to the client to say what they could offer, and then hopefully, get the project. And this proposal is then also, if the project goes ahead for the agency, this project is then shared with the freelancers and analysts, like me, and along with follow-up, further briefings. So this is typically the first thing you hear what you're supposed to do for a particular client. So this is the agency talking to the would-be client. You'd like to create a single narrative that covers what you, the client, thinks about a particular issue and how it talks about the issue. The deliverable will be an internal content framework that people can turn to whenever they need to say something about you, the client, and the issue. The text will be available for copying and adapting into other communications as needed. Here's another one. You feel that it has become harder for you to talk to customers in a way that is meaningful, simple, transparent, and relevant. You can often and inadvertently do use language that does not seem real. The business objective is to develop a new and contemporary articulation of service for the client, and especially to develop this within the existing marketing framework. Right. Now, as it's patently obvious, this is impossible to even operationalize, let alone deliver, without particular things. First thing that is needed is an explicit knowledge of how language works in different contexts. The analyst will need a meta-language to describe and explain the linguistic data they will be working with. But they also need the ability to translate their findings back into the client's language. So there's some translanguaging going on as well, and sifting genres across contexts for different audiences. But where can language workers get this knowledge, these resources, and those skills? Now, I'm not the first one to observe that communications textbooks are sometimes sorely lacking in equipping language workers with these resources and skills and knowledge. If we just have a quick look at marketing communications textbooks, three recent ones, completely random, and similar things could be said about management and leadership communication textbooks, what we find is a typical structure of these and other books, where first they say something about communications theory. And yes, they have moved on from Shannon Weaver. Yeah. So you do find more complex models, circular models, models that look at context, etc. Then they usually talk about communications tools, by which they mean things like press, you know, sponsorship, PR, advertising, etc. So rather broad level things. Usually a section on the media mix. So how do you use press releases? How do you use social media? How do you use television advertising? And then they usually talk about the content of the artifacts that are to be produced themselves. But that is usually where at least marketing communications textbooks stop. Yeah? So there is nothing about how to actually use language or about, you know, which metaphorically could be called the mechanics of language use and language work. Jonathan Clifton has looked at this for leadership and management textbooks, and he similarly finds that even if such popular prescriptive books do provide linguistic advice, it is usually presented in the form of simplified scripts based on intuition and recollection, rather than direct observation of what actually happens. So we have two problems here. We have one problem that many textbooks in this area, leadership, management, marketing, etc., are not based on authentic data or research of authentic data. And we have these simplified scripts, very often formulaic, non-authentic data, and crucially, we have a gap between these best practice examples and what they are meant to achieve. Yeah? So there is best practice example, there is effect, but how actually is language used in these best practice examples in order to achieve a particular effect? So without laying that open, the underlying mechanics of language use, it is of course impossible for the non-linguistically trained practitioner to actually use this creatively and productively across contexts. So this ignores the need to adapt language use to different contexts, which is arguably the most important skill of a communicator. Right, I'm now going to go on to look at language awareness, just a snapshot really, spotlight, of language awareness in some of these people that I call language workers. I conducted these interviews or collected them. They're half published by pre-published, a bit more than half I conducted myself this year. So they were initially assembled for this research network initiated by Thurlow that I talked about before. So I didn't have a specific question on language awareness, but when I was invited to give this talk, I went back to these interviews and thought, actually, we can say something about their language awareness, you know, what they talk about without explicitly talking about language awareness. So let's see who these interviews are with. So as you can see, mostly private sector interviewees. Yeah. Brand consulting, retail, TV channel, lots of agencies, healthcare communications consulting, design company, investment banks, across the board. And the ones in italics were published in the popular language magazine, Babel, or on a website called Career Profiles in Linguistics, which is run by Anne-Marie Trester in Washington. Some are public sector, central government, TV company, and a few are third sector. So it was pretty opportunistic, to be honest with you. I was just going through my professional networks and snowballing it from there and supplementing it with pre-published interviews. So what we can see already here is that we have people in very different kinds of organizational settings. We also have people at different levels of seniority, very much. But we also can see that professional language work is done by people with a variety of backgrounds. That came through in the interviews. So they have backgrounds, i.e. degrees in linguistics, computing, history, anthropology, film studies, journalism. Some have no university degree. And they also use a variety of linguistic frameworks, corpus and computational linguistics, interactional sociolinguistics, linguistic anthropology, especially in the States, discourse analysis, cognitive semantics, and the list goes on. It's basically what they happen to know, what they come across, they run with it. Fair enough. What did I ask them then? As I said, nothing specifically about language awareness, but we shall see that we can say something, at least tentatively, about their language awareness. So, semi-structured interviews, roughly in three parts. So I would ask them, first of all, about their educational background and their current position as work, how did they start their career, just a couple of warming up things, really. But then, perhaps more pertinently, what knowledge did they get from their degree that they can use or need for their work? For the initial interviews, I was particularly interested in timescales, conditions of text production or analysis, and I also asked them what processes did you apply in producing or analyzing texts, i.e. how do you go about it? And then a more conceptual question maybe, how do you see the relation between linguists working in academia and language workers in other contexts? Where do you see points of shared interest and possible collaborations? And I asked the question in both directions. So I asked what you think academic linguists have to offer to language workers and what you think as a language professional you can offer your colleagues in academia. Good. As I said, when I was invited to this talk, I went back to the interviews and pulled out just a few quotes, really, that throw a spotlight on language awareness. This is tentative, but it does give some insight. So this is the head of communications for a national TV company. And he says, we want people with good writing skills, by which he means broad vocabulary, no cliches, interesting and exciting copy. So this is already the effects business again, interesting and exciting. Okay. No cliches is the closest we get to what it actually means to be interesting and exciting. A lot was about at the level of Lexis. So this is somebody from a think tank who says, a lot of deliberation in writing press releases is around word choices. And the second one, this is an interesting case. The interviewee was first the PR person for the central government of his country, then later became the same government's communications advisor, and then when left that job, he first had a degree in journalism, then he did this communications advising from the central government, And then he quit that civil service job and did a PhD in critical discourse analysis. So there. In actual fact, on the very day that I interviewed him, he had just submitted his PhD thesis. And he very kindly still agreed to be interviewed. So here he is reflecting on his past as a government communications advisor. And he said that he would be critical about things that were a bit mystifying. This is probably the language of CDA creeping in here a bit. And he would say, just the choice of words, very specific jargon was used, technical terms. I would be critical towards perhaps too lengthy and complicated ways of expressing things. Now this is interesting because by this time that I interviewed him, he has the technical meta-language. Yeah, to describe what he means. And he knows he's talking to somebody who shares that repertoire. So he could have gone on to talk about hypotactic sentence structure and all the rest of it. Yeah, but he doesn't. He talks about lengthy and complicated ways of expressing things. Perhaps because he is reenacting, you know, his former professional self as a communications advisor and putting it in lay terms, really. Right, and then here's a bit of a longer quote from a managing partner of a language consulting agency, not the one I work for, I would hasten to add. So, and he says, how distinctive a business's writing is and what it says about them, the client, is still largely down to the intuition of our writers. They pore over tens of thousands of words. What does that mean, to pore over words? And they spot patterns and themes. For instance, do some areas of the business sound more formal than others? What would make them sound formal? The crucial step next step is to make it persuasive or warm or surprising or whatever effect it is you're after. So here we're back to the effects, quite explicitly. Okay. Good, just a spotlight. As I said, you know, not necessarily representative, but I thought at least interesting nonetheless. Good, so how could we raise language awareness, at least in, you know, language workers who are typical of these quotes, which by no means are all of them, of course. So I think to enable professionals to identify what linguistic strategies function effectively in a given context, we need to direct we, here meaning applied linguists, I'm speaking as an academic applied linguist now, we need to direct the attention to language in action, so authentic language data, and to the underlying mechanisms as well, to develop a sort of meta-language. So doing so would allow professionals to observe, reflect on, and internalize linguistic and discursive practices, without which, you know, they probably won't get beyond rote learning of best practice examples, or simply intuition. So we're then back to the myth of the creative. Good, how could we do that? We, as applied linguists here, applied linguists can write textbooks on business communications, and in fact they have done. So Almut Kirsten, Mike Hanford have contributed to a series, Galinda Mountner has done so, my colleague Erica Durridge and I are about to finish, honestly, about to finish our textbook on business communication. And there's also Margiela Chiappini's and others' book on business discourse, where they point towards studies in business communication that are also of use to practitioners. Applied linguists can research language work and language workers, as we do in this network that I mentioned initially. Applied linguists can collaborate with practitioners to combine insider knowledge and analytic language awareness. Sarangi has made this call already 14 years ago for healthcare communication. And of course, in some cases, applied linguists can double as language workers. Let's look at the collaboration issue. Okay? And this is where the third question to my interviewees comes in. So what do you think academia, academic linguistics has to offer to you? What do you think you have to offer to academics? A couple quotes here. So there was overwhelming consensus that linguists are needed. We need to take this with a pinch of salt. They were talking to a linguist. So there's a lot of face work going on, you know, positive face work towards me. So, but nevertheless, This is a PR assistant, and he says, it would be good for a comms department to sit down with linguists and for them to work together in analyzing what makes for a successful approach here in crisis communication. This is the global campaigns director of a think tank. And he says, we are keen to work with universities. I've never had any official training in linguistics, and in fact, I rely on people who have very heavily. Linguists could illuminate how language keeps us locked into a certain logic. We really need the insights of linguistics, desperately. Other areas as well, but also linguistics. And I don't think he was just being polite towards me when he said that. And this is from someone who has a background in computing and then founded a brand consulting agency that works with semantic tagging and corpus linguistics. And he says, because we don't have a linguist on our team, it's quite hard to translate what we do for the marketing world, making the rather bold assumption that linguists would be good at this kind of translanguaging. And then he ends with some classical self-deprecation, we're just techies. But linguists are slow. It's quite hard work putting a new idea into academia, because whereas on one hand we give it to business and they will run with it, you give it to academics and then she checks herself and starts doing some face work towards me. Obviously it needs the rigor sitting behind it and you need the literature, but it makes for a very slow start. So very, very different timescales. Also writing style and focus. Most people, especially in academia, think their writing has to sound sophisticated to be effective. You can just hear the exasperation here, can't you? This is the person with a background in computing again, who used to work in academia before he funded, together with somebody else, his agency. And he says, I got very frustrated that I was researching all this stuff and it never got used in the real world. This term keeps cropping up again, the real world, the real world. And I think this term really does some ideological work. Anyway, he says, I have 50-odd papers, but to me they're all irrelevant compared to having it used in the real world. So I think inside and outside academia alike, we do run the risk of fetishizing the so-called real world. Just a note here. And then somebody with a background in linguistics, now in the private sector. For a linguist, you may find a specific linguistic form and its function interesting, but if it's something that is not relevant to a larger audience, then it may not be the most important. And what they really mean here is the client. A design perspective involves caring about your participants more than pursuit of your specific discipline. So the primacy of client interest and perhaps user interest as well. And also, what applied linguists teach is not always seen as useful. Often it is, sometimes it isn't. So, this person has a degree in English language. I will admit that he has it from Lancaster. And he says, the module Language in the Workplace also opened up the topic of language in a crisis, but to be honest, it's wildly different actually working on this side of it than analyzing it externally. Okay, point taken. Okay, so this is about what could academia offer you, how could you relate to linguists? How about vice versa? And that's where the big silence set in. What could we offer academia? I don't know, not sure. Lots of hesitation. Don't know, really. And first I thought maybe they were doing face work again, maybe they wanted to minimize self-praise, all that, and then I realized, no, that's not what it is about. Anyway, it wasn't clear to them what they could offer linguists. Here's two examples, but they're rare. So here's somebody saying, you know, I was invited as a practitioner to talk at students at the university so they could learn about the activities of a practitioner. And this is a person from the think tank again who says, the bridges between practitioners and academics in these areas are unbelievably weak. I remember when I met name of a linguist in cognitive linguistics here and brought him to a particular NGO, he said, I'm amazed anyone's listening. I've been saying this for 20 years. Yeah, but as I said, on the whole, the language workers were not at all sure what they had to offer linguists. And no, this wasn't minimizing self-praise. This was, their focus was elsewhere. They were much more interested in raising awareness of their clients. They felt that their clients, or potential or would-be clients, lacked awareness of the importance of language and linguistic analysis. So while I might have been thinking, with my academic head on, that some of my interviewees missed, you know, or lacked some level of language awareness, they found it lacking in their clients. And their focus was on raising it in their clients. Obviously, if the clients see the point, they make a project, right? So here's, you know, just a chorus of voices basically all saying the same thing. I think clients are starting to understand that language is really important. This is certainly the more advanced agencies and brands are starting to realize that, but for the majority, they don't really get it yet. It amazes me how linguistics is still a secret subject. All kinds of people have heard all kinds of nonsense about language without considering that it might be possible to design experiments to test their ill-informed prejudices. This, incidentally, is the same person who said that the work office freelancers relies largely on intuition. Just saying. Sometimes as a linguist, you have to explain a lot. You have to explain the value of linguistics, especially to clients. We educate doctors on how to better communicate, and we help patients communicate with their doctors about their condition. This is what they're interested in, not what they could do for academia. The task is not just to answer the question, but to also educate the lawyers, judge and jury, etc., etc. It's just four quotes. Okay. Now, where does that all leave us? About raising language awareness. If we took a simplistic view, a view of knowledge transfer that used to be known, you could see something hierarchical like that, where applied linguists hold the knowledge, you know, about language awareness, how language works, how discursive strategies work across contexts or don't, etc., etc., and we pass this on or raise the awareness in language workers. They, in turn, see that they need to raise the awareness in their clients. That would be a simple hierarchical knowledge transfer model. But we know that these processes don't largely work like that. They work much more like complex systems. So we also learned something, or applied linguists also learned something from language workers about language and discourse-related problems that are faced by people in private and public sectors. And of course, to the extent that applied linguists can double as language workers, they also work directly with clients and may raise language awareness there, and vice versa. They also learn something from clients. And there's our students, where we would hope we raise some language awareness, a bit more on that later. Yeah. Language workers, to the extent that we involve them in our teaching, likewise. Okay. So, the whole thing gets rather more complex. And it is this point that I would like to take some pause for thought.